Okay, our next title will be Irrigation Strategy and Crop Load Affect Nutrition Management of Drip Fertigated Ambrosia and M9 Apple Trees.
Thank you. The work to be described here was undertaken at Agriculture Canada's Research Center at Summerlin, British Columbia, in the southern interior of BC. A small picture of the research station on the shores of Lake Okanagan and the crop with which we're dealing, which is apples in this case. We have to cope with drought. We're in a rain shadow, and like most of Western North America, our irrigation water is basically snow melt that accumulates during the winter months. And current climate projections suggest that the amount of snowpack is decreasing in mostly all of the western mountains except for some in Southern California. And furthermore, we have quite a variation in our own region of precipitation, as indicated by the bottom graph, which gives you an idea of the amount of inflow into the lake I showed you, Lake Okanagan, over time. You can see that there are particularly some years that are quite dry, particularly recently. And in fact, we've had several water shortages impose drought because the irrigation districts haven't had sufficient water and they've had to start thinking about cutting back on allocations to different groups. And so the growers in the region are quite concerned with drought, the implications of drought. You can impose deficit irrigation, but there's a cost to the trees. You can get away with a certain amount of it by reducing the crop load. And so we did an experiment to look at that, to maintain apple size, which is one of the big quality criteria, by reducing crop load. At the same time, and this aspect of the study is to look at what effects that the imposing these droughts and crop load variations are on the leaf and fruit nutrition, and then hopefully to give some guidelines if these situations occur as to what one might do with respect to the nutrition. So the experiment we designed involved ambrosia apple on mulling 9 rootstock. That's a dwarfing rootstock, planted at a fairly high density, 1 meter by 3 meters. These trees were drip irrigated with 2 4-liter per hour drip emitters located about a foot on either side of the tree in the row. The irrigation is automatically scheduled by an electronic atmometer scheduled to look at the variation in canopy during the year and computerized so that you turn the irrigation on the next day depending on the evaporative demands from the day before. And these are all fertigated. This is our standard fertigation practice, nitrogen daily, for 6 weeks post full bloom during the vegetative growth phase, single application of phosphorus, the rates are given there, and potassium daily for 3 to 6 weeks post full bloom at 20 grams per tree. So that's the standard, plus a little bit of boron, but don't need very much boron. The treatments that I'm going to be talking about were imposed from 2007 to 2009, split plot. The main plot units were various irrigation treatments, which are listed from 1 to 4 there. Number 1, the daily irrigation at 100% ET replacement would be considered the maximum or optimum irrigation cycle. And then you can see there are various reductions of that down to the 4th treatment, which is a fairly severe reduction of 50% and increased in severity over time, 2007, 8, and 9, as 50%, 25%, 18% of ET, and every second day, so you have a considerably longer drying period, fairly sandy soils. The subplot units were crop load. These are 5 tree plots within those main plot units, and in this system, what you do is you impose that soon after bloom by removing fruit and at different densities, low, medium, and high. And you can see low is in the first year 2.5 fruit per square centimeter of trunk cross-sectional area. So it's an intensity measure on the canopy. And, of course, the tree is growing over time, so those numbers change over time. And just to illustrate that, indeed, if you do these deficit irrigation strategies, you're going to save a lot of water. drip irrigation itself is a considerable saving of water because you don't irrigate the whole orchard floor. But you can see, and of course, because we base our irrigation on the evapotranspiration, it's going to fluctuate depending on the weather and the year. And these are the numbers for the time period we were doing the experiment. So you can see at the extreme in 2009, 18% of ET, you're only applying 78 millimeters per hectare, and that's a tremendous reduction. But there are costs to these things. I'm going to talk about the nutrition, so what I'm going to refer to is leaf samples, and these are what we call the standard samples for the standards that are developed, mid-terminal New Year's growth, and some of them are indicated here for the very young trees, and we did the nitrogen by lethal combustion analysis, and the calcium and the other nutrients by ICP, and that's the same analysis that was used for fruit. I'll refer to fruit a little bit later on. In just the big picture, leaf nutrition, these are the means of the some key nutrients here. And I've ranked them in order of nutrients that first nutrients are primarily delivered by mass flow, and phosphorus, potassium primarily by diffusion, and boron probably depends on the fertility of the soil, could be either way. But you can see that mostly the annual means is the overall picture of the blocks, fall in the normal range, with the exception of potassium. There are some rather low numbers there, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. If you go through and do the analysis of variance to see what factor, whether it's irrigation or crop load, you can, and what I've tabulated here is the years of significant differences. And for irrigation, the sign of the thing is for the treatment that has more stress, that is going from I1 to I4, so, for example, for phosphorus in 2 years, that stress decreased the concentration of phosphorus. Interestingly enough, potassium, which we normally think of being limited by diffusion, wasn't affected. So obviously phosphorus is a key nutrient that's affected by diffusion in this particular crop. Crop load, quite a few more significant differences, quite a large effect. And take a little look at some of the data. Phosphorus, as mentioned, was affected by the irrigation treatment, by the crop load. So going from low to high, you tend to, over the years, you can tend to decrease the phosphorus concentration. Crop load effects also for potassium. And you can see here the pattern. You can see if you look over the years, it looks like a decreasing value, and particularly at a high crop load in that third year, starting to get quite low numbers in potassium, looks like a potential problem there. Fruit nutrients, and when I say fruit nutrients, these are concentrations usually expressed traditionally in milligrams per 100 grams fresh weight, analyzed as I mentioned previously, but these are cross-sections of the whole fruit, so they include skin, peel, but not seeds. Seeds are quite a complicated and a different situation for fruits. If you look at those numbers, not as good as standards for the fruits, but there are some numbers for calcium. You can see perhaps the only one that would be worrisome there is there's some low calcium. Calcium is quite correlated with storage disorders and quality in apples, so it is quite an important nutrient. If you go through and do that same type of analysis of variance, looking at the main factors, irrigation, crop load, or their interaction, you can see it's quite complicated. There are a lot more interactions between the irrigation and crop load, but also a dominant effect, and this is for all nutrients, a dominant effect of crop load. Let's take a look at one of the parameters, crop load and fruit calcium, and you can see here, these are concentrations. The critical concentration I mentioned for apples is 4 milligrams per 100 grams fresh weight. You can see with the low crop load, there tends to be, in the first years, there's a bit of an interaction in year two. You can tend to see that the low value is below 4 parts per million, which would probably indicate storage disorders or harvest disorders like bitter pit, which can occur and cause a loss in economic value of the crop, so early in the years. But of course, the complexity of the relationship, part of the reason for this is that when you're talking about concentrations, you've got to realize that the size of the fruit is changing a lot. In natural fact, one of the big patterns in this plot is, and if these are 2 years of data, the top is 2008, bottom is 2009, the axis is day of the year, and then the fruit diameter is on the y-axis. And basically, this is separating one side is the crop load and one side is the irrigation. You can see if you sequentially measure a number of fruits, you label them and do the diameters, that interestingly enough, both factors affect the size. Crop load actually looks like it affects the size more than the irrigation treatments. You can see in 2008-2009 data, very dominant effect. And, of course, if you're changing the crop size, then you're going to have effects on the concentration. So probably better to look at parameters that take that into account, and there's different ways you can calculate these. Mass of actual grams rather than milligram concentration. You can do mass in the fruit, or you can even do it as mass per unit area and kilograms per hectare. And when you do that same type of analysis variance, you get a lot less interaction, and you can see a dominant effect of crop load on the amount of the mass in the fruit or the unit area removal. A dominant effect when you're altering things, so that if you look at these things in terms of demand, and this is kilograms per hectare nutrient removal, you can see for phosphorus, which as we said before was affected both by irrigation treatment, tend to decrease from I1 to I4 over the 3 years, and also affected by crop load. But you can see the nutrient removal rates are rather small for potassium, or for phosphorus. Potassium is coming up next. Dominant effect of crop load. You can see much higher nutrient removal rates. Potassium is one of the key nutrients in the fruit itself as you go from low to high crop load. And another way of looking at this whole thing is to go back and look at nutrient balances. Remember at the very first I mentioned three of these nutrients as being fertigated annually, and we put on so many grams per tree. And then within those treatments, we had quite a range and remove. You calculate and express as grams per tree. And I put a second figure there as percent of maximum. And you can see that we're certainly lots of room for freedom there for nitrogen and phosphorus, but not for potassium. And of course, remember some of those leaf potassium levels were quite low. So in summary, the whole process of going to deficit irrigation to conserve water, if you have to, you drop the crop, you alter the crop load by and you can yet maintain fruit size. The nutritional problems is maybe a leaf potassium problem, and they seem to develop later in the cycle of this experiment, around the third year. And then the fruit calcium problems tend to be early in the life of the experiment, and is intimately related to this larger fruit size. So deficit irrigation really doesn't have too many effects on leaf nutrition except for phosphorus. It has a complex effect on fruit nutrients because of its effect on fruit size. And crop load has a dominant effect on leaf nutrient demand and leaf and fruit potassium concentration, especially for potassium, so the high demand in the fruit. And so if you're going to use these short-term crop load adjustments to decrease the crop load and maintain fruit size, you really have few negative effects on leaf nutrient concentration, but you're going to decrease the fruit nutrient demand. And I think the sensitive indicator for us is going to be potassium as an indicator of potential stress in these fertigated high-density systems. And with that, I would like to thank you for your attention and ask any questions.
Hey, Terry, I was just curious. I know you use a deficit irrigation, especially in the number 4-1, every 2 days, 25% and 18%. And 18% and 25%, that's... So you say every 2 days, second, that 1 day is definitely not irrigated. Even them, they have to separation, right?
Yes, yes.
The other 100% and the other one, 50% is everything.
Yes, yes, yes.
Did you actually, besides you find the fruit size decrease, the actual yield, did they have anything? I know fruit size is most important.
Yes, yes, yes. The yield, I don't have the yield data here, but yield is obviously affected. It's a multiplier of mean fruit size times the number of fruit. Yeah, in the worst situation, because we are also recommending this, is this a viable thing you can do for very long? And what tends to happen as time, you can get away with it for 1 or 2 years. But if you get into the third year, remember that was 18%. We couldn't take enough fruit off the tree to maintain the size, and the yield was probably 30% by that time. So the recommendation to the irrigation purveyors who control the water supply in the area is that we can't do this forever. This can't be this, you know, it has to be a high priority to irrigate these high value crops. So that this is, yes? Oh, yeah, yes, I think probably, and I don't know whether it's economic worthwhile because it depends on your crop load when it's very light like that, but there's a tendency for large fruit in the early production stages naturally anyway, regardless of this experiment, and that's curable by, in our case, food-grade calcium chloride sprays in midsummer. I might add an additional fact to your comment. We actually did leaf water potential in there as well. And those numbers I showed you for size changing, being affected more by crop load than it was by the irrigation deficit, also held for leaf water potential. It was lower with the heavy crop loads. When you separated those curves out, the gap, the delta was higher for the crop loads. Crop loads quite important as a stress thing on the fruits.